Welcome into Footnotes, Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game on this miserable Wednesday morning, followed by a miserable Tuesday morning, and it is, wow. Movie from a line comes to mind, and then depression set in. That is, just another face crushing at the hands of the worst team in the league. We've been talking about it for weeks, how the Astros, for whatever reason, have played much better this season against teams with winning records than teams with losing records. It doesn't really make sense, and yet in baseball, just about everything makes some sense in baseball. But, wow, another miserable performance last night. Just a huge punch in the gut when you really need your starting pitcher to go deep, and he leaves in the second inning with shoulder discomfort. Jose Urquidy was out of there real quick, like one batter into the second inning, and it was just like, oh, no. Like, there's just no way. Like, when you're pitching Ralph Garza Jr. in the fifth inning, I'm like, all right, how in the world are they going to play nine innings tonight? It's just not going to happen. There's just no way they can get these people out. So even when the game was tied at three, when the offense just continued to stink, I mean, the Piper, not only is the Piper getting full, like, the Piper's kind of doing a touchdown dance right now in the Astros. He's doing. I mean, he's not just getting his money back. He's getting his money back, and he's spiking the football in their face. It is ugly. And so I was like, it's 3-3. You're at home. You're playing the worst team in the league. Normally you'd feel okay about this situation, but I'm like, there's just no way they got enough pitching to get through nine innings. And of course they gave up five in the eighth, four in the ninth. What have they given up? 14 runs after the seventh inning in the last two games? 14. It is ugly. And, you know, they play again tonight trying to avoid the sweep. And you would think, oh, they're not going to get swept by the Orioles. Well, there's a lot of pressure. Again, they've been swept by three teams with really bad records already this season. So, there's really no real reason to think they're not going to get swept tonight. The only thing that gives me some hope is, you know, you got to have some pride, one. And two, they scored 13 runs. Maybe the Piper can shine on the Astros shot side. So, wow. Wow. It was such a bad situation last night. I just, in the bottom of the eighth, I said, I just can't take anymore. The 4-hour game from the night before, I just can't take anymore. So after Brantley grounded into a double play in the eighth, fortunately, I did not see Robel Garcia get lit in the ninth. Normally, I stayed at the end no matter what, but it's just that was too much to take. So I did not see Robel Garcia give up four runs in the ninth inning last night. Awful. On the flip side of things, I wonder if any of us have, hopefully we've all reached this conclusion, making predictions in the NBA playoffs in 2021 is a totally futile proposition. Like, okay, now we've got this figured out. This team is going to win. Like, you know, it's just silliness. Like, I wonder if everyone was completely honest. Outside of the Hawks, I'm not talking about the Hawks. Every fan base has eternal optimist kind of fans. Not talking about any Hawk fans. If you ask everyone who remotely cares about who wins any NBA game, whether it's just a very casual fan like me or really into it NBA fans, what percentage of people, when they heard that Trey was not playing, said the Hawks are going to win? Like, seriously, what percentage? It had to be less than 5%, maybe less than that. Like 1% of the American. Like, I mean, is there some, you know, there was just no reason to believe it. And not only did the Hawks win, they demolished them. Now, I understand that a lot of the narrative was, well, Giannis got hurt, and he did midway through the third quarter, but they were already down by double digits. Like, they were down 13 at the half, and Giannis was playing. It's unbelievable. These playoffs, or as I suspected or thought it would be, as crazy and unpredictable as any playoffs have been in the NBA in at least 17, 18 years, and maybe in my lifetime. This is craziness. Now, again, I mentioned yesterday, are any of these teams any good? I have no idea. I don't really think any of these teams are playing at this super high level historically. I don't think anybody is. I mean, this is a war of attrition. It's unbelievable how many frontline players have missed time and gotten injured in these postseasons. In this postseason, it's remarkable. It's got to be unprecedented. I don't remember it, but again, I don't. There's all, when we say things like that, we don't, you know, there's always a year or two, or usually a year or two, that you just forget about that was like 27 years ago or 38 years ago or something. I mean, I don't have all of that on the top of my head, but to me, it's just unprecedented. In my mind, it's just, this is unbelievable how many injuries there are. And again, not just nagging injuries to mediocre players, but we're talking about fairly significant injuries to elite players. So, but it just goes to show you know, and it goes to one of my major themes, is it's about the teams, not about, I understand the NBA is a star league, and that does them very well. No question. But, you know, what a great statement made by the Hawks. Yeah, their best player was out, but that doesn't mean they can't win. And you know, the good thing for them is the backup, Williams, is not like a guy in his second year that's never done anything. I'm not saying he's a great player. If he was a great player, he wouldn't be a backup. But this is a guy who's in his 30s. He's kind of been in the league. He's not going to be intimidated by the situation. He's just going to go play because, you know, he's a veteran. He's been around. He's not elite, but he's an NBA player, and he certainly wasn't intimidated by the situation, scored 21 points. So, you know, what a great performance. And so now, to my original point on this subject, just 2 days after it seemed like a 90-something percent proposition that it was going to be the Bucks and the Suns, what percentage would you give that now, that it's going to be the Clippers and the Hawks? I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, again, but it doesn't even do any good. Like, everybody's going to say, oh, this team's going to win, or this team's going to win, or it's going to be this and that. I mean, just hush. Again, we have no idea. None of us know. None of the analysis makes any sense. Let's just stop trying to figure it out. Let's just everyone throw up their hands and say, it's silly. I understand that it's what we do on talk shows. We give predictions, or we try to analyze what we're watching and what we're seeing and connect the dots, which is basically what I've been trying to do on my talk shows for decades, but there is no connecting these dots. It's just you throw up your hands. None of us have any idea. There's nothing to base anything on other than we have no idea. None of us have a read on what's going on. It is just, it's a postseason of chaos. A lot of it's determined by injuries. But again, it's kind of fun. I kind of like the, for all of us who don't like chalk, I mean, there's no chalk involved here. I mean, we just have no idea what's happening. Every day, the whole storyline changes in these NBA playoffs. I think it's fun. I think it's more interesting. Obviously, there are certain coaches like, man, the court of public opinion on Ty Lue and Nate McMillan. I don't know what they all were coming into these playoffs, but boy, have their reputation skyrocketed during these playoffs in the court of public opinion in the media. I mean, they're looking like stars. They're coming out of these playoffs as stars, especially if they end up taking their teams to the finals. So still a long way to go. But I mean, again, I'm done with expecting anything. We should have been done like a round ago. We're all pretty stupid, and it normally takes us a long time to figure out what we really should be doing. But right, I'm done with expecting this to happen. Oh, now it's going to be this. Oh, now no, we don't know. Just throw up your hands, watch the games, and stop saying, "Oh, this is what's going to happen," because we have no idea. I mean, it's just the craziest NBA playoffs. Maybe ever. And it's kind of fun. I need something to distract me from what's going on right now with the Astros. Oh, man. All right, we'll take a commercial break. We'll come back. We had made a little progress yesterday on a footnote summer project. I said I would do some LSU games. We'll do that. And I'm going to do a little bit, not totally, but a little bit what I said I wasn't going to do. Talk a little, start previewing some NFL stuff later in the show as well. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. We're broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Want to remind you, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to win a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. But you can't win if you don't join, so go to 1037 The Game, join the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. All right, I'm going to get to the project, but it hit me again last night. Like, I cannot be the only one that thinks this. I know I'm really anti-individual award. Not real big on MVPs and all that stuff. I gave up. You know, I used to do it every year where I'd write a column about, criticize the fans because this guy should be in the All-Star game. And who cares? I mean, the older I get, I'm not passionate like I used to be 15, 20 years ago. Like, so-and-so should be in it. They're getting jilted by the fans and they should be in the, I mean, I'll have the discussion if you want to call and say, what do you think? I'll tell you what I think, but I'm not going to be overly passionate about it. Now, one thing I still am is Hall of Fame. And we, you know, when Hall of Fame discussions come up, I'm still pretty passionate about that. That's one individual. To me, Hall of Fame is just different than an individual all-star game or MVP race or coach of the year or whatever. But so I'm watching this game last night. And they're talking about the Astros players and you know, trying to make the all-star game and all-star battling. Meanwhile, the Astros are getting dominated by the worst team in the league. So it's like, I don't want to hear about all-star games. I don't want to hear about all-star balancing when all these guys that are just, you know, and again, I'm not down on any of them individually, but I don't want to hear about that when they can't hit the ball at the infield against the worst team in the league and they're getting their face crushed. I don't want to hear about all-star balloting. What I want to see is a double in the gap with the bases loaded. Give me that. We'll talk about all-star balloting later. Let's not get embarrassed again at home by the worst team in the league. Let's stop worrying about all-star balloting. Who cares? How about the goal, not get embarrassed at home by the worst team in the league, get your face totally crushed? How about not having Garza pitch in the fifth inning? Let's stop worrying about all-star balloting. Boy, that stuff drives me bonkers. I don't care about all-star balloting. Care about not getting crushed at home by another awful team. That needs to be the focus, not all-star battling. Who's in the all-star game? I'm just trying to get to the all-star break so they can rest. I don't want my guys in the all-star game. I want them resting. I'm more worried about the games that happen after the all-star game. Now, once, you know, I'm not saying I never watch the all-star game because I usually watch some of it. But no, I don't want to hear all that, especially when I'm getting crushed by the Baltimore Orioles. Can't get them out. Can't get them out. I mean, how do you get the Baltimore Orioles out? How do you do it? Well, you got all these all-stars. They're in the all-star balloting. I mean, that's all a bunch of foolishness. Let's just not get swept at home by the Orioles. Start worrying about all-star balloting. All-star battling, so stupid. Anyway, all right, I'll try to get off of that. Hopefully, they can get a win tonight. The Detroit Tigers and the Cleveland Indians did not play yesterday. They play a doubleheader today. That's somewhat significant for the Astros, could be anyway, because the Astros begin a four-game series at Cleveland tomorrow. Cleveland has a doubleheader today. Cleveland's got a lot of pitching injuries. So that's shaping up for a pretty interesting matchup, especially if the Astros get swept at home by the Orioles. They'll be going to Cleveland with their tails between their legs. And Cleveland, you know, who I don't know what they're going to do today in this doubleheader. The good thing for them is doubleheaders are now seven innings and not nine. Or that, you know, that would really, I think that would help the Astros even more. So very interesting to see what's going to happen today in Houston, what's going to happen between the Tigers and the Indians in this doubleheader. Hopefully both games go extra innings. And then we'll see what kind of – I know the Astros aren't going to have any pitching left for the weekend. I mean, they didn't just pitch Robel Garcia in the ninth last night because they were getting lit. They pitched Robel – they had no pitchers left. Other than the closer, Presley, they had no one else that was able to pitch. Like, if they had gone extra innings, I don't know, they would have had to just pitch Robel Garcia, I guess. I don't know who they'd have pitched. They had no pitchers left. Not a good situation. So it's going to be interesting to see how many pitchers the Indians use today and then how many pitchers they have left for this four-game series in Cleveland over the weekend and if the Astros are going to have any pitchers left. And suddenly, you know, you go into the stretch with a six-man rotation and now one of them gets hurt. Like, you know, injuries normally kind of take care of that stuff. So, anyway, lots to look forward to or to monitor today and see how – but no, please, I just – what I need to do when the Astros are losing is just mute the TV. because I just it just drives me bonkers hearing them talking about all-star games while guys are striking out with the bases loaded or popping up with the bases loaded against the Orioles at home. And they can't, no one can get a hit. Well, let's focus on this, that we're about all-star balloting. All right, I said I would do some LSU games. It is, what, day three of week five of our footnote summer project, and we've been talking about this week is college football, some Cajun games we talked about. Someone talked about the first bowl win over San Diego. I brought up the road win over Houston in 06. We talked about the Southern Miss game, the Mike LeMoyne game in 1989. We had a Tulane victory, or victory over Tulane, where they won 51-34 in 88. Talked about the Rice win in 82. While we're on 1982, the other win for the Cajuns that is one of the more famous Cajun games ever. It has a name. It would be called the Dwight Prudhom game. 1982, I was at the game in the stands with two of my three brothers at the time. I think my youngest one brother was too young and he didn't come to the game, but if I remember correctly. But Cajuns were down 26-0. Those who were old Cajun fans certainly remember this. And they stormed back and won 40-26 over then ULM, now Louisiana Monroe. Well, no, it wasn't then ULM. It was then Northeast Louisiana. I said that wrong. It was Northeast Louisiana, NLU. So that was a very memorable win. But I said I was going to bring up LSU games a little bit before my time, but I've heard a lot of people who were a little older than me talk about the 1971 win over Notre Dame after losing 3-0 the year before. Notre Dame came to Baton Rouge and got beat 28-8, so that was a good one. In 1982, ones that I have more specific memories of, LSU beat number 7 Florida State at home to earn a trip to the Orange Bowl, 55-21, threw a bunch of oranges on the field. 1984, they beat USC 23-3, and they had lost in 79, just an agonizing kind of game where LSU thought they had beaten USC. It was that famous year where they played two number one ranked teams, lost Alabama 3-0, lost to USC 17-12, but they got a little revenge against USC and beat them 23-3. When I was in high school in the early 80s, Mississippi State owned LSU. John Bond, any old school LSU fan, should remember with, just agony. Remember with total frustration the name John Bond. He was the quarterback for Mississippi State. They ran the ball in the early 80s, and John Bond never lost to LSU, went 4-0 against LSU. John Bond. But in 1985, the year after John Bond left, LSU beat Mississippi State 17-15. So that felt good after all those frustrating losses to Mississippi State. 1982, hadn't beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I vividly remember this one, LSU beating them 20-10. That was a great win. 1993, beat Alabama on the road. Alabama at the time was 7-0-1. LSU went and beat them. 1995, crushing Tugtail Nick Saban's face in the Independence Bowl. That did my heart good, 45-26. And then obviously a year later in 96, beating number one Florida 28-21. So when they were doing all that bring back the magic stuff. So those were the LSU feel-good wins that I kind of remember growing up. One right before, I was alive, but right before I kind of followed the games and a lot of those in the 80s and into the 90s. So any other LSU extra special, extra satisfying wins, feel free to call in this next segment or anytime, you know, the rest of this week. We'll have that ongoing. And again, we are now 3 weeks from, isn't that unbelievable? 3 weeks from the opening of NFL training camps. 3 weeks. Unbelievable. So we'll talk a little more College World Series. We haven't brought that up yet. Any more on the Footnote Summer Project? And yeah, I've been trying to push away the NFL talk, but we'll do some of that in the next hour as well. For now, we'll take a commercial break. We'll be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. Want to remind you to go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to maybe win a $100 Google Play card, which you could use for apps, games, music, movies, whatever you'd like. But you can't win, like all our great prizes, if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com today. Join the Rewards Club. You might win a $100 Google Play card. All right. Got an email for great LSU memory, and for the LSU fans that hate Alabama, I mentioned the 82 win over Alabama and the 93 win over Alabama. What about the 2000 win over Alabama? I hadn't beaten Alabama at home since I was 3 years old. And beat Alabama that night 30-28, so I could certainly understand how for a diehard LSU fan, that would be one of the more satisfying, if not the most satisfying, win on, you know, for a discussion like this. So certainly you get that one. And again, so much of these have to do with understanding the games in context. For instance, the year before LSU beat that Florida team in 96, Florida beat LSU 56-13, crushed them. And back then, Florida crushed a lot of people. And there was, so it was one thing just to beat a team ranked number one, but it was another thing because of what had happened the year before. And then for that 2000 win over Alabama, there was a lot of year befores. And in that series, that made that win extra, extra, extra special. So I certainly understand that one. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Kev. Man, I wanted to call yesterday. I couldn't get in time, but it was about the UL football talk. Kevin, it hadn't happened yet, but if UL goes to Texas this year and beats them, which I think could easily happen, that might be the biggest win in UL history. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I mean, I it would be humongous. But I think Iowa State last year was actually a little better team than Texas is right now.
Yeah, but just with all the history that Texas Longhorns have.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it would, their new coach, yeah. You know, just to – Iowa State was a big win, but to beat Texas.
It would be tremendous, yes. It would be awesome.
Yeah. I got a funny story for you. I was at that game in 96. I was playing JUCO ball in Mississippi. And I told Mom and them I couldn't come in because I had studies and all kind of stuff. Well, after LSU had won that game, I guess the ESPN cameras called me with no shirt on the field going crazy. Mom's like, well, how was school this past weekend? Mom and Dad saw me on ESPN on Tiger State. We had rushed the field.
How in the world?
I was caught on ESPN, and I got busted. So. Letterman.
Thanks. Man, if you lied to your parents, you got to lay lower than that. You can't get on national TV with no shirt on. Oh, wow. That is a funny story. No, obviously, that was a memorable, great victory. And there was lots of fun because that was the same, if I'm remembering correctly, that was the same year as the Texas A&M win for the Cajuns. So, no, there was some field rushing in South Louisiana. That, you know, no, that is funny. You gotta come on now. You gotta lay lower than that if you're trying to sneak around there. But no, hopefully we have to have that discussion. Like, hopefully the Cajuns can beat Texas, and then we have to have that discussion, which one is more impressive. I think, certainly if you want to discuss it, we can, which one would be more impressive. But let's kind of, if Coach Billy Napier was here, he'd say, well, let's beat Texas first, and then we'll have that discussion, which one was more impressive. I do think Iowa State last year is better than I think Texas is going to be. It's certainly better than Texas was last year. I don't know. I remember when the Cajuns upset Iowa State, there were some people trying to be negative saying, oh, Iowa State's not going to hardly win any games. Well, I'm like, well, that's just not true. I mean, Iowa State's pretty good. Like, they're going to win a lot of games this year. And they won a lot of games. So they weren't like some donkey program. They ended up finishing, what, in the top 12, something like that. I'd have to go back and look. But, I mean, they were top 15 for sure. It would be tremendous. But got to do it first. You know, I think the Cajuns are going to be better than they were last year. On paper, they should be. I don't think Texas is going to be better than Iowa State was last year. And yet, that doesn't mean the Cajuns are going to win. I mean, it just, sports just doesn't always fit into those on paper categories. So we'll, you know, that's why, as they say, you got to play the game. So we'll see. But no, it's in August, man. We're going to be talking about that matchup a lot. No question about it. Speaking of matchups, speaking of big college events, obviously it's the final game tonight of as long as they get it in of the college athletic season. It's over after tonight. Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, 6:00, ESPN2. Very interesting scenario yesterday. Like, if this was the Astros and they were playing, you know, I would be not happy that they just won 13-2. On the flip side of it is, I would be very happy that I didn't have to use a bunch of pitchers, including my best relief pitchers, to extend my season and get to a game three. So it's going to be some conflicting things here. I think once you get this late in a season and it becomes a mano-a-mano game, I think you got to throw some of that out. But it's still very interesting that usually when you score 13 runs against a good team, against anybody, but especially against a good team, that next day you're not going to score too many runs. Would not surprise me at all if the final score tonight is 2-1 or 3-2 or 4-3. That would not surprise me at all. In fact, I kind of think it's going to happen. And it's not just because Mississippi State scored 13 runs last night. It's also because the on paper, anyway, the quality of the starting pitchers tonight is going to be higher. And both teams were able to save some of their better pitchers because it was a blowout game. You know, if the game's 4-3 in the sixth, 4-4 in the sixth, then you have to worry about that a lot more often. But you got Rocker pitching on 4 days rest for Vanderbilt, and Bednar pitching on 3 days rest for Mississippi State. And so it should be an excellent game. So I didn't want to go too far into the program without mentioning that. I mentioned yesterday, you kind of hope Mississippi State would win. But for those of you who were hoping Mississippi State wins at all, it was great that they won. If I was sitting there watching, I'd be saying, I wish you wouldn't have won quite so dominant in such dominant fashion. But a lot of that had to do with walks and errors And that shouldn't work ahead of you against Mississippi State as much as it normally is, you know, when you get 13 runs and it's because you got like 18 hits or something, like the Astros stupidly did a couple weeks ago, and now they're really, last week, and now they're really, really paying for it. But it should be a very interesting game tonight. Again, unless you just hate Mississippi State, and look, if you're an LSU fan that hates Mississippi State, especially in the sport of baseball, that runs deep. That goes way back. A lot of old school bitterness going back to the 80s there. I get it. I got no problem with that. You know me, I love a good old-fashioned sports hatred. But for those who aren't in that number, I kind of hope Mississippi State wins. But I certainly would understand a contrary opinion there. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Yeah. Hey, I was calling just to see your thoughts on LSU's hire for the baseball coach and, what you think about some of the players coming over in the transfer portal as well. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks. Well, you know, it happened with the women's basketball hire. They arguably had the best offense in the country this year at Arizona. I mean, they had a dynamic offense. If you remember a couple weeks ago when I did my statistical analysis of the four or comparison of the eight teams in the College World Series field before it started two Fridays ago, Arizona's offensive numbers were just spectacular, better than everybody else's. I think he will have players. I think that's going to be good. I think it was a good hire. I think LSU needed a little bit of a dose of adrenaline to get the offense back going. Now, again, it's not going to work if you don't pitch. I mean, offense is fun. Obviously, you have to pitch. You don't want a team or a program that consistently scores a bunch of runs and can't pitch. But I just think you'll be able to pitch better at LSU than you did at Arizona. I just think you'll be able to do that. So no, I'm good with the hire. I've heard a lot of difference of opinion. I've heard some people who are mildly that aren't very high on him at all. I've heard people who are really high on him and people who are kind of in the middle. I think. It's a solid hire. I think he is going to bring some good hitters with him, especially now with the transfer portal the way it is. That, you know, that happens anyway before where you bring some people, especially whether it's coaches or players. But with the transfer portal, yeah, I think they're going to get and they need a boost offensively. And I think he's going to be a refreshing change to kind of bring a new offensive perspective. And they need to score more runs consistently. Like I said, I mean, when I saw LSU at Tigmore Field earlier this year at Russo Park, I was like, this team is, I don't see them being physical enough at the plate. And overall, I don't think they were, but I think he's going to bring some of that back. So I got no issues with it. We'll see how it plays out. All right. Hear the music. We'll take a commercial break. Finish out the first hour next, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. Well, actually, that's for next hour. We won't have time to take a phone call in this short segment, but 706-0111 in the 10 o'clock hour. Certainly feel free to call. I want to remind you again about that Astro Weekend getaway. Time is running short to qualify for this. The next one, that is a week from this Saturday. Tomorrow is July. That is amazing to me. A little on the depressing side for me, but that's the way it goes. I try to push football season as much as far away as possible. But Saturday, July the 10th, Astro Weekend Getaway. You could win a 4 tickets to Astros Yankees and a $200 Visa gift card. But again, you can't win if you don't join. So go to the go to the website, 1037thegame.com, and take advantage of this great week, Astro Weekend Getaway, brought to you by Butcher Air Conditioning, JJ Exterminating, and 1037 The Game. Speaking of the Yankees, I asked yesterday for a victory, and they went out and crushed the ball, scored 11 runs. It's so funny. Talked yesterday afternoon to a Yankee fan friend of mine who was freaking out and panicking about the team, and I understand. I even relented yesterday and how they can't hit and they can't score runs, and they go out and they score 11 runs last night, crushed the Little Angels. Now, on the flip side of it, Ohtani hit two more home runs. He hit two more home runs. What does he have, like 28 now? So, kind of perfect. You know, the national media can continue to freak out and they get beat. I can swallow the attention. I'm good with the attention on Ohtani when they lose. When they win, it's a little harder for me to swallow. I like this way better. The Yankee, you know, the Angels lose 11-5. He hits two home runs. Now today Ohtani's going to be pitching, which is obviously why, you know, he would be getting a certain amount of attention if he was just hitting, but he's pitching well, much better this year as well. So we'll see what the Yankees can hit against him today. But it will be it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Appreciate, you know, while we're talking about rooting for people that I don't normally root for, the Rangers last night. Joey Gallo hit two home runs and beat the A's. So while the Astros are mired in this week of just getting pulverized by the Piper, I appreciate any A's losses. That will do it for this first hour. Another hour to follow, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. If you have any football memories, Cajuns, Tigers, or elsewhere in college football, certainly we've got today and two more days to tell just feel-good victories. We certainly mentioned a lot of them having to do with the Tigers and today and the Cajuns yesterday and a little bit the day before, but and some national ones, but certainly room for plenty more. So if you want to get in and give us some of those feel good, I need some feel good victories. It seemed like, you know, it's so funny for the Astros had this unbelievable month, first 3 weeks of June, and all it takes is one awful week and it just leaves you just like thinking like you ain't ever won a game in forever. It's the downside. I always talk about how the great thing about baseball is that you play almost every day. So when you're winning, you want to play. When you're losing, you want to play so you can get rid of that awful feeling. Well, a losing streak, while a winning streak can make it awesome, a losing streak can just come out of nowhere in a hurry, and in a week's time, you've lost 4, 5, 6 games. And, you know, then you just, as I said an hour ago, and then depression sets in. So they need to avoid the sweep tonight. And again, you can hear that game right here on 103.7 The Game. Hopefully they can avoid it. But man, Luis Garcia's done an unbelievable job this year. He's going against Matt Harvey, who wasn't that long ago, he was like one of the talks of the league, and then you thought his career was over, and now he's trying to rehabilitate it a little bit. So we'll see if the Astros can actually, like, you know, get an extra base hit again. I mean, it's just been, so it seems like it's been forever since they actually hit a home run or put a ball in the gap with a runner in scoring position. It's just, it's the Piper paying them back. I get it, but it's not fun. Even though I understand it, doesn't mean it's fun to go through. It's awful. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Did the Bears win the Super Bowl yet? I haven't been listening. I doubt it. But listen, one of the great games I went to, I believe it was Southern Miss. It was Favre against Mitchell, and Southern Miss was up like 28-0. I was like, man, we might as well just leave. So we left. We rushed back because, of course, UL came roaring back and won the game. I forgot the score, but it was pretty amazing.
And this was at Cajun Field.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember there was nobody there, like no one.
Wow.
I mean, imagine that. But I'm going to reverse it, though. The one game I'm still mad at, and this is what made me not like Coach Hudd, the Florida game. When they were running up and down the field against Florida, and Florida couldn't stop them, and then we lost. They lost in the end.
The punt killed him.
Yeah. I mean, he was playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
Right.
I mean, am I wrong in thinking that way?
Well, I mean, you know, that stuff can work either way, but you're right in thinking that he was playing more not to lose. And sometimes when you play not to lose, it can work out. It can. But, yeah, I think that's what he was doing.
Yeah, but I mean, against a national team like that, I mean, you dare? What do you have to lose? Keep grinding like you were grinding in the first half. You know, I mean, I can understand if it's a conference game and you do things a little bit different, but I don't know. I mean, I saw y'all hiring for a producer in this show. Is it like exclusive to you? Because you know every good pitcher needs a good catcher, right?
Well, we have a new producer. Nick's here now.
Oh, I thought, yep. Okay, so y'all did hire.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right, let me retract all that. I told Ronnie I was coming and I was going to hang up on him every time he called. It's all good. Have a good
all right.
day.
Take care. You know, he brought up Hudd. And when you bring up Hudd now, or if we bring up Hudd 10 years from now, there's one game that is going to stick out the most to me as like the game that just felt good. 2013, it was actually a very impressive two-game stretch. You know, two of the better teams in the league besides the Cajuns at that time were Western Kentucky and Arkansas State. The Cajuns went to Western Kentucky and won 37-20. And then that next week, they essentially played Arkansas State for the conference championship and just played, just physically mauled them and won the game 23-7. And it was, I think of all the years and all the games, and I know there were a lot of good wins, and Hader just brought up a close loss. But of the wins that they had in the Coach Hudd era, I think that's the one that I'm going to remember the most. And I think a lot of people forget about it. It was going to Arkansas State. It just physically beating them up 23-7. So, all right. 706-0111. If you would like to get in, let's do this. I'm not hearing something, so let's take a commercial break, and we will just a few minutes earlier than we normally will. When we come back, we will. I will shift gears. Today is 3 weeks from the start of NFL training camp, and Saints Hader just called. He's a Bear fan, and I. Don't have the Bears on this list, but maybe we need to add the Bears to this list. But I'm going to come up with a couple scenarios, and we'll see which one seems the most likely of happening. We'll kind of, you know, I've been pushing away the start of football season, but since we are 3 weeks away, since tomorrow is July, unbelievable, We'll do a little bit of early NFL talk next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Look, if you want to talk about Game 3 of the College World Series, which we talked about last hour, certainly feel free to call. If you want to talk about the Astros getting crushed, which hopefully we're going to put that on the we talked about last hour. Certainly feel free to do that. The NBA playoffs, unbelievable performance last night by the Atlanta Hawks. And, again, I'm at the point, as I said last hour, I just trying to figure these NBA playoffs out. I'm just, forget about it. It's just it's a futile process. Just watch it. If you're interested in it, watch it, and we'll just see what happens. I mean, it seems like every game, the narrative totally changes. Somebody else gets hurt or, some shocking, totally unexpected victory happens here and there. So we'll just see. So if you want to discuss any of those, or if you have any more great victories, satisfying victories for the Cajuns, the Tigers, or anyone else in college football, certainly feel free to do that. But as I said in the last hour and before the last break, I'm going to relent. Kind of had some, there's so much to talk about, obviously, going into the college football season, the NFL football season. But when I heard that training camp starts in 3 weeks, I said, okay, we'll start the process as much as I've been trying to push it away just because my little mind needs a rest after a long school year. But anyway, so I'm going to bring up four potential headlines here. You tell me which one has the best chance of happening. I think the vast majority of us will say that none of them will happen. But that's not the question. The question is, which one has the best chance of happening? One of them is this. Jared Goff seems to find a new home in Detroit and leads the Lions to a surprise playoff berth in Dan Campbell's first season as head coach. Anybody buying that one? Jared Goff, there's so many interesting storylines going into this season, and he's one of them. He, this is the guy that wasn't that long ago, too much to our chagrin, was in a Super Bowl, and then shortly thereafter he became a total laughing stock. Like the guy's like a total laughing stock. He essentially got beat out by somebody, a quarterback no one's ever even heard of, and he's going to Detroit to play for a head coach who used to be the Saints tight end coach, who because of his introductory press conference is a laughing stock. He gave one of these old school crazy press conferences talking about biting people's kneecaps off and all this craziness. So the second one, Daniel Jones shocks everyone with a high-efficiency season to lead the Giants to the NFC East title. I don't think too many people think that has a chance of happening either. The third one, Drew Lock emerges as Denver's starting quarterback over Teddy Bridgewater, has a breakthrough season, and leads the Broncos to a surprising wild-card berth in the AFC playoffs. And one more. I mean, I have many more, but we're going to start today with these four. After a slow start by Tua, the Miami Dolphins acquire Deshaun Watson, and he leads the Dolphins in the second half to a playoff berth. So of those four, which one would you say is the most likely to happen? I think most of us would actually vote 0 for 4. I wouldn't, because I think Drew Lock's better than most people think he is. But we'll see how those play out. Just four thoughts, kind of random thoughts, headlines that I don't know that I wouldn't mind seeing them, but would shock the world, because that's when it's fun for me. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, how about Ian Book takes over for injured Winston to lead Saints to playoffs? Oh,
I saw someone the other day, and they were having it was on Facebook, and someone was coming like, who should be the Saints quarterback? And some people were saying Winston, and some people were saying Batman, and then someone said, I hope it's Ian Book. I'm like, Ian Book, you got to be kidding me. But go ahead.
Hey, I'm actually working on your project, man. I love your summer projects. You know that. And I'm on the road a lot, so I may have missed some. I tried to go for some of the less obvious ones, but they may have been covered. First off, the Prudhomme game you talked about.
Yes.
That was homecoming. That was my very first homecoming.
Wow.
And we were losing at half, if I'm not mistaken. And
26-0.
They just came storming back. I was actually on the bus making out with my date, and the band got done, and we're like, let's go back in. She's like, why do you want to see? We're going to lose. And I'm like, it's football. It's never over till it's over. And we go back in, and they just romp off, what, 7 straight scores to just steamroll them, which was, again, as a freshman, your first homecoming. You don't forget those games. But did anybody talk about the Southeastern game in 2017?
The Southeastern game, no. No one has mentioned that.
It was crazy. It was like 51-48.
Oh, I remember the game. It was, kickoff returns, all kind of crazy stuff going on.
Yes, Southeastern scored with less than a minute to go to bring it to 48-49, and they went for 2 to win it. And the Cajuns recovered the fumble on the 2-point conversion and ran it all the way back for their own 2 points to win 51-48.
And
I remember that. I was listening on the radio. That was a crazy, because you said that game had a little bit of everything in it, but it was like a basketball game when they were done, 51-48. The other one was the ULM game, and I think it was 2011. It might have been 2010, where we were down 11 points with 2 minutes left, and we scored basically 2 touchdowns in about a 60-second span to win. And that was the thing that stuck out for me was Green recovered, our tight end recovered the onside kick on the run. I don't know if you remember that.
Absolutely. I was on the field when he did it. It was an era where they let us go on the field right there at the end. And yeah, I was right up the line, saw him do it. It was, definitely a great memory.
Crazy. It was, again, he recovered the onside kick on the run. He didn't score, but he got close enough to where we threw a short pass to win it. So, anyway, I'm trying to find some, because we all know the 50-yard field goal to win the bowl game and the Texas A&M. It's the one, the little one. And I'm trying for the life of me to remember the game I saw. And what was memorable about it was a driving rainstorm. This is back in the 80s. And I remember it because I had just gotten off a National Guard drill duty. And me and my buddy were still in our fatigues, and we had our ponchos on, our green ponchos, and we were probably 2 of 15 people in the entire stadium, and it was this monsoon driving rainstorm, and it was the same type game. It was either Tech or ULM, I believe, but it was one of those just crazy games. And I remember looking at him in the middle of the game and like, what are we doing out here? And he's like, where else are we gonna be? I'm like, okay, that's fine. But that's back when the student section was already a thin to begin with, and to literally, I bet you we were 1, 2 of 15 students sitting in the whole stadium on that side of the field. So I just wish, if I could wish anything for the Cajuns, it would be involvement by the students. I just think you're missing such a great part of college life, a part of the college experience. And you go to a game at LSU and you see those students, and they talk about football games they attended as students for 50 years afterwards. And it's the one missing piece of the puzzle here at UL that just drives me crazy. Some of my best memories as a student was going to the games with my fraternity brothers and the parties afterwards, and it's just a missing piece to the puzzle down here. So if they could some, I mean, they're winning. You can't ask them to do more than they've done the last several years, and we still can't get people on that side of the stadium, and it just drives me nuts, Kevin. So if you can be genius enough to figure out a way to get students in there, I'll vote for you for athletic director because it's just,
look, I can still remember, you know, I was in my very early days. I was a sports editor at the Vermilion in the mid-80s, and I was writing columns about getting students to kind of, it's just one of those things. I don't know that it's ever going to end. I don't know that there is going to be a solution to it.
And I think the people that don't go are the big losers. I think they're losing out on memories. Again, listening to you talk about, again, the game you talked about with Prudhomme, you were there in the stands, and those are the things that make them memorable, is you were actually there. And, again, I'm just wishful thinking, but one day it's going to happen. It's hard to be more impressive than what the Cajuns have done the last several years, and if they can't put people in the stands for that, then you're right, it's going to be an uphill battle. So maybe we just keep praying, and one day our wishes will come true.
Tomorrow is July, Joey.
Yes.
July.
This year's flow, and it's a crazy year because it's like you've unleashed a bunch of caged beasts, you know, with the COVID people getting out, and it's I got a feeling this 4th of July is going to be nuts. I really do. I think it's going to be crazy, and people done lost their minds already. But it's just going to be, I don't know if it's going to be fun nuts or bad. I think down here it'll be fun nuts, but I think in other parts of the country it may be bad nuts. But I do think it's going to be, for lack of a better word, insane. But, yeah, July, it's training camp is, what, 3 weeks away?
3 weeks.
Oh, man. And it's going to be a training camp unlike any for us in the last decade, because I remember going to training camp one year when I got to that signature from Marcus Williams, and I remember Drew had this big horde around him after practice, and it was like, you know, 30, 50 people trying to get his autograph, and I walked around the whole stack, and I just yelled over to Drew, good luck making the 53, and he kind of stopped. It took a second to think, and he stopped writing autographs, and he shook his head, he looked up, he said, thanks, man, I'm working hard, and I'm thinking, well, this year, literally, it's, I mean, we don't know who our quarterback is, Kevin. We think we got an idea, but we're all anointing Winston, and Sean Payton loves Batman. So I prefer Batman in the Batman role, and if you put him at quarterback, you kind of lose that. But I wouldn't be shocked if we run a legitimate college offense with rotating quarterbacks this year.
Oh,
that would
on.
Not shock me with Sean Payton.
Look, my Astros are having a rough week so far. I need all the help I can get. Please don't do that to me.
We'll
first, you bring up Ian Book. Now you're talking about two quarterback systems.
Hey, at least I didn't say three. That would have really driven you crazy.
Please, let's not do that. Thanks, Joey.
God bless, bro. Have a great fourth.
You too. No, it's and Joey mentioned a decade. It's actually been 2 decades. Am I missing? I mean, it's actually been, well, but even in 2000, Jeff Blake was acquired in the offseason. And you knew he was going to be the starting quarterback. So it's actually been probably going back to the Ditka era. Because even in the Katrina season, Brooks was still there. So there really wasn't any question going into camp, which was, I don't even know if you call that a camp, but there really wasn't any question, because you remember the end of the 2004 season, the Saints went to Orneville and beat them in a game where they both theoretically still had a chance to make the playoffs if the stupid Jets would have won. And the Saints won that game, and then they started the Katrina season with the feel-good win in Orneville again. And so there really wasn't any question at camp who the Saints' starting quarterback was going to be. So it's been 20 years, it's been 21 years since the Saints went to camp and haven't known who their starting quarterback's going to be. So obviously we'll be talking I've been trying to push it off and push it off. We'll be talking a whole lot about that in July and in August and into September. It seems like every day some Saints fan on Facebook or Twitter or something is talking about it. You know, the people that write about the Saints are talking about it. I get it. It's going to make for preseason games, which I often, not discard, but downgrade. Preseason games are going to be more interesting now than they've been in a while, I think, this year. Looking at the tight end, it's hard to get a whole lot on defense. It's hard for me to make, but just seeing the execution of the quarterbacks, the rhythm, whether there is some or not, whether they can complete short passes, whether they can complete slants, and whether there's enough of a touch on screen passes, all those things are going to be overanalyzed to the hilt in Saints preseason games this year that we've never really had to do in a long time, to Joey's point. So it's exciting, scary, all at the same time. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be back with more 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, go to our website. Put yourself in position to win one of two gift certificates to Cypress Bayou. Could be a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse or a $25 gift certificate to Mabel's Kitchen, both at Cypress Bayou, which you can't win if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com. Sign up for the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win one of these two great gift certificates to Cypress Bayou. All right, breaking news. Maybe it was the day to kind of start talking about the NFL a little bit. Big Saints news. Right tackle Ryan Ramczyk signs a 5-year, $90 million contract. $60 million guaranteed, makes him the highest paid tackle. So it is, you know, it's great news in that here's a guy that, again, when I wish we, you know, you if you want to go back and when they were drafting him, if you remember, he wasn't the most popular draft pick on the day after the draft. I'm talking about the day of the draft. It was, you know, what are you picking an offensive lineman for? And we talked about it for year after year after year. How much success, even before Sean Payton era got here, even before Mickey Loomis ever got here, going back to the 70s. Well, the 80s. In the 70s, they didn't have much success drafting at all, to be honest. But going back to the early 80s, the Saints have had done an incredible job of drafting offensive linemen. And it works almost every time. And here's a guy that on draft day, a lot of people, man, he should have picked so-and-so, should have picked so-and-so. And I remember that year, the thought process was, man, did he bet that draft pick bailed out the season. And it's just, he just continues to get better and better. Now he's the highest paid right tackle in all of football. And he's earned it. And it's great. Offensive line is a great place to start. It just is. It's a great place to start. And it's going to be, again, like we were just talking with Joey, a very interesting season. I think we're at the point, though, and there's going to be a lot of difference of opinion. There just will be. But I think we're at the point now, and we've been at this point for a while, where you just have to trust them. I mean, look, those of you who have been Saints fans your whole life, kind of like me, if you're my age, a little bit younger, a little bit older, and you go back to the 70s, they did some stupid stuff. Even into the 80s, did some stupid stuff. And so I get it. Why for years and years you just didn't trust him. Then we went through the Ditka era, which was just a complete joke. But now we're at the point, yeah, is the franchise in transition? It's in transition. I know there are a lot of people that are really pressing the panic button because Drew Brees isn't around anymore. But I still think that whether it's Sean Payton or Mickey Loomis, you just have to trust them. I mean, I think they've earned that trust. Now, again, that I'm talking about in the formation and the building of the organization, of the roster, of maintaining a level of consistency. And again, can you argue with game management, here and there? Of course, we all do. That's never going to end. But in terms of keeping the organization moving forward and highly competitive, I think you just have to trust them. And they've earned that trust, and here's another example of that. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
So all that sounds good, but I don't want that old college stuff like Joe is talking about, though. I don't want that different quarterback all-season stuff.
Oh, no, I don't believe that.
Like I said before, if you got to do all that, well, that means you're not confident in one guy, so you don't know who your guy is. You know, and that's not good going into the season. They got to be solidified before we go into the season, huh?
Oh, I think. Now, again, my only concern, Ronnie, along that front is that, to me, if I want to prepare someone to replace Drew Brees on a full-time basis, I want that cat getting all the first-team reps. Like, I don't want him splitting first-team reps. That doesn't make any sense to me. But other than that.
I don't know, man. I do not believe
they're going to have a two-quarterback system. No, I don't believe that. Now, I want Batman to throw passes. I want Batman to be Batman, and I want more of that to be throwing passes. But I don't, if he throws two passes a game or three passes a game, I don't think that's a two-quarterback system. That's just gadget stuff. I want him throwing the ball more in the gadget role. But no, a two-quarterback system, no, that doesn't work. That's not going to happen. I don't believe that.
Yeah. I don't want that. I don't want one guy playing a half and you come with another half and, oh, it ain't working with this one, so we go with this one. No, I mean, I don't like all that stuff. I mean, that stuff, it bad, it works in college. It works sometimes, but I don't know. I just don't believe in that type of stuff. You got to have your faith in your guy, the guy you're rolling with, let the team get behind him and you all roll together. But all that different, stuff and all that. Now, Ramchek signing. So you think he's going to be the left tackle of the future or what? Or he's staying on the right side?
I think he's going to be on the right side. But for now in the future, will Armstead be here 2 years from now or 3 years from now? Probably not, or at least a lot of people don't think so. And so if that's the case, then, I guess all that's possible. But, man, he's been on the right side his entire career, so we'll see how that works. But now he will be. Long term, I don't know.
Yeah. But that's going to be the bugaboo, though, if he switches over. Okay, now you got to start from scratch on that side again to replace him. You know what I'm saying? So, you're putting yourself in a bugaboo anyway. So, who knows what would have happened there? Because, that's how I look at it. So, you don't look at it the same way. If you take him off that side, he's a great protector on that side and stuff like that. You bring him to the left. Okay, now who's going to jump in his shoes and fill that gap over there?
Well, no question it's an issue. But, again, that's something everybody's got to deal with. Everybody's got positions where, you got to make tough decisions. And they're going to need to draft someone.
All-pro right tackle, and putting them on the left and leaving that other side completely non-field. That don't mean whoever jump on his side and fill that gap on the right side, that don't mean they're going to do what he did,
That's absolutely true. But I still think the left tackle is a little higher than the right tackle. So if they end up having to make that move, then you got to do it. You got
to
do it.
They're both important. The left has to be great. The right has to be great. But if you take the right and bring him to the left and try to make the left great, well, you better make sure that right side is covered up and make that great again. Because it'll be, like I said, start from scratch again at that position. So we'll see. But I just don't want that double quarterback stuff and all this routine stuff.
I don't believe that.
You got to roll with a guy and roll with it. I'll talk to you later, Foot.
Thank you. No, I don't. I agree with you, and I don't think you have to worry about that, Ronnie. That would be shocking. I mean, it would be shocking for a lot of people if Batman beat out Jameis. It would be even more shocking if they ran a two-quarterback system. I guess the only thing that would be more shocking is if Ian Book was the quarterback. Ian Book. Oh, man. And again, I'm sure some of you are out there and go, look, you just talked about it. You got to trust them. I trust him with everything, but I don't trust him with this drafting a quarterback thing. I don't know. I know. There's a group of people out there that are buying the Ian Book stuff. I'm not buying it. That will have to be proven to me. And hopefully we don't have to find out about that for at least 2 to 3 years. But again, unless Jameis just doesn't work out at all, I don't see where Ian Book's even going to be a topic of discussion other than injury situations down the road. I don't see it. I just think that's something to laugh and joke about right now to aggravate me with. But I don't see that being an issue. I don't see that being something that's really going to play into for the Saints, but we'll see. But no, big news on the Ramchak signing. You know, it's been an answer. It's been a question for a while among Saints people and talk. Okay, who do you sign? You know, that's day one, which is Lattimore. Ramchak, Z28, Kamara. I mean, they're all important. They're all critical, all of them. And so, you know, we just been waiting for which domino was going to fall when. And that's why, again, in that area is what I mean when I say you got to just trust him. I don't necessarily trust him to do everything that I'm going to agree with in terms of who's the backup quarterback or what this draft pick is going to be like, but just kind of organizing and who to sign. And one thing they've done an incredible job at is signing the core players. And I understand everybody's panicking. Well, I say everybody. A lot of people are panicking because the 45th and 52nd best player on the team's it's not going to be as experienced or as safe of a pick or as with as much history of being a good NFL football player as it's been the last few years. I understand the depth concerns because you had to get rid of this person and that person and that person because they were so far over the salary cap. But they've done a great job of signing the core, keeping the leaders together. And, you know, at that point, you just have to you have to make the right choices on undrafted free agents and hope the draft picks come through. And I think there's some draft picks that were signed last year, who were drafted last year, who didn't have a major impact, that are going to have a much better impact. I feel so much better. I read a story earlier this week, and it wasn't even a Saints player. It was a player from another team. His basic comments were, I can't even imagine coming into the league. And this guy, I don't know, he's probably a 5 or 6 year player. He was basically saying, I can't even imagine coming into the league and not having all, you know, having to go through what the rookies from last year went through. He was basically saying, I'd have been in deep trouble. Like, if I had no training, hardly no training camp, none of the off season stuff, none of the off-season workouts or rookie mini camps and all that kind of stuff, and then having a very disrupted camp. He's like, I can't even imagine what that would have been, how far behind I would have been. So I think in addition to the undrafted free agents, which they got to hit on. They just need to hit on a fair amount of them, no question, especially at places like cornerback for depth. But I think some of last year's draft picks are going to do a little better this year than what the court of public opinion thinks they're going to do. So, you know, that's all part of it. But again, the big news, Ryan Ramczyk signed five-year, $90 million contract, 60 guaranteed, highest-paid right tackle in football. And what a football player. We'll take a commercial break, finish out today's show, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. I want to remind you, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. You can redeem 100 points to score merchandise like T-shirts, whatever you would like, hats. Who knows what Raymond's got on there now. But step up your fashion game by visiting 1037thegame clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. Just listening to that Aaron Rodgers promo, we haven't heard a whole lot lately other than the Devonta Adams news. One thing that I had not seen until recently, I mean, I don't know if I knew it, I forgot it, that Devonta Adams was a college teammate of Derek Carr. And, you know, Derek Carr's been on the news because Brady was bashing him. But it'll be interesting to see. I would think that the Packers would sign him, but if the Aaron Rodgers thing goes astray, I mean, Carr has publicly said he's going after Adams. It's kind of funny the way that – I mean, I don't know that you need to be saying that kind of stuff, but it's interesting. But, again, it goes back – I go back to the comment that we talked about a week ago. It's like think of where someone said it doesn't help anyone. It's bad for everyone if Aaron Rodgers doesn't start the season with Green Bay. And I'm like, boy, is that an inaccurate statement? Think about the Bears and the Lions. I was brought up, you know, the Lions in the last segment, the Lions and the Bears and the Vikings and the Saints, you know, opening up against the Packers with the whole quarterback situation and everything else. It's, man, you know, while on the surface you think it just impacts the Packers, what's going to happen when Aaron Rodgers, but no, it impacts so much more than that. It's so much more than just about the Packers. When you lose just say it happened. I don't really believe it's going to happen, but just say he's not the quarterback of Green Bay. You lose in a division future Hall of Fame quarterback still in his prime. It just changes the whole landscape. I mean, it's just a totally different scenario for that division. And I know I probably put a little bit too much emphasis on not getting off to a slow start because the Saints have gotten off to so many slow starts in the history of their franchise. I got to believe the highest amount of slow starts of any franchise ever. It's unbelievable. When they're bad, they get off to a slow start. When they're good, they get off to a slow start. It's unbelievable. But I don't know. Very interesting to continue to follow that. All right. Appreciate the phone calls. I got through it today. I was a little worried after last night's game. Hopefully the Astros can bounce back tonight and salvage some. Y'all have a nice day.